Dharma practice is not difficult. Be determined. Doing as if it were a game won't do you good. Doing on and off won't yield results. Be single-minded. Be persistent in practicing. As a layperson, this is what you need to do. When I was a layperson, I practiced Dharma every day, maintaining the five precepts, setting aside time for Dharma practice, and practicing wherever I had free time. The moment I woke up, I started practicing. Whenever I thought of practicing, I started by feeling the body and mind. During the day, I observed my mind no matter what I was doing. For example, waking up on Monday morning, you feel lazy going to work while pondering why weekends are so short. If lazy, no so. Taking a shower or using the toilet, see the body doing those activities. To go to work, you wait at a bus stop, yet the bus has yet to arrive. The mind becomes anxious, no so. Got on the bus, then happy. Know that you're happy. Keep on observing your mind on and on. Around the clock, whether you stand, walk, sit, lie down, eat, drink, take actions, talk, or think, be self-aware. Keep on observing your heart or mind on and on. Off work, go home. Take a shower, have dinner, have some rest, then practice Dharma. At first, I did a lot of formal meditation. I did sitting meditation at home, not at the temple. At home, I meditated till the mind became empty. I saw phenomena emerging from the emptiness. They arose and fell away repeatedly. I kept on observing them. This is how I practiced formal meditation. It is a concurrence of samadhi and wisdom. Therefore, do not spend time in vain. Our time is limited. Long or short, we never know. What we know is that it is never enough to satisfy our demands. The craving is vast. The demand is numerous. No matter how much time we spend on satisfying the craving, it will never be enough because the craving is endless. Therefore, to gain attainment, you must refrain from indulging yourself too much and getting trapped in worldly happiness. Living in the world, you must be wise, disciplining yourself and practicing every day. Soon you will be able to attain. For the rest of us, we may not be able to meditate until the mind becomes empty, then observe the phenomenon surfacing. We may need more samadhi to do that. However, we can do what is within our capacity and keep practicing. For example, whatever phenomena arise, know so. Eyes see forms, the mind changes, know so. Ears hear a sound, the mind changes, know so. And the nose smells, tongue tastes, body feels, know so. If the mind changes, know that it has. Through its door, the mind strays to think of a story, developing one state. The mind wanders to think of another story, developing another state. Good thoughts make the mind calm. Evil thoughts make the mind agitated. We ignore the story which the mind is thinking. Just know that it has thought. The stories do not matter. Instead, know that the mind has thought repeatedly. The mind will stray through its door to think. Practice like this repeatedly. Your samadhi will gradually get stronger and stronger. During the day, while making movements, if the body moves, sense that. If the mind changes due to contact making through any six sense doors, sense that. Then, our momentary samadhi will get stronger. For example, if the mind develops greed, and we are aware of that, the greedy mind will fall away, giving rise to the mind in the absence of greed. The mind will then develop samadhi. Therefore, that we can be mindful of each time any phenomenon arises will give rise to a moment of samadhi, called momentary samadhi. Suppose we are consistent in practicing momentary samadhi from dusk till dawn, for example. Any moments you're free, observe and know on and on. In that case, the samadhi will gradually collect its strength. The mind will gradually become rooted in awareness and dominance, which is requisite for the next step. Once the mind has become rooted in awareness, do not let it merely stay dull like that. Instead, separate the aggregates. If we cannot separate the aggregates, the physical and mental parts, or elements, wisdom cannot proceed. Let alone vipassana, if you cannot surpass the initial wisdom cultivation. Therefore, we should train till the mind becomes rooted in awareness. Do not force it to happen. Instead, keep on practicing and accumulating till the mind automatically becomes rooted in awareness. That is how it can gain strength. Suppose we try to maintain or control it. It won't be happy. The mind is like a child. It doesn't like to be controlled. If it is not happy, samadhi cannot arise. Therefore, we need to practice. If you can do formal meditation, do so. If not, practice momentary samadhi. Whichever phenomena arise, know so. Whichever phenomena arise, know so. Keep up practicing like this for some time or months. The mind will eventually be dominant and sustained so that we can move forward to wisdom cultivation. Having the mind become dominant and sustained, you will see the body as one part and the mind as another. They are different things. This is the initial wisdom cultivation, mind and matter separation. Venerable Longta Mahabua once said, "If you cannot separate the aggregates, do not brag that you're cultivating wisdom." Therefore, to cultivate wisdom, you first need to be able to separate mind and matter. This is called insight of mental-physical delimitation in Bali texts, which is the wisdom to separate between mind and matter. In order to achieve such wisdom, upright knowing samadhi is required. Upon knowing that the mind wandered away, we have developed upright knowing samadhi for a moment. Wandered again, know so again, on and on. Ultimately, the mind will be rooted in awareness and can sustain. After that, we come to separate the aggregates by seeing the body breathing, as the mind is the knower. The mind is the one that knows. See the body standing, walking, sitting, and lying down as the mind is the knower. See the body moving and staying still as the mind is the knower. Observe and separate on and on. See the happiness and suffering arising within the body. They are not the body but enter the body. They are two separate entities. They are not the mind either because the mind is the one that observes them. Another thing that I used to do was trying to sit still and not move at all until it developed so much pain. Then I observed that pain and the body are two different things, also different from the mind. This is when we become more expert at separating the aggregates. At first, we separate the aggregates, the body and the mind. Next, we separate the pain arising within the body, and see that just now, it has no pain, but now it has. Despite the body sitting still, the pain wasn't there, but now it's there. Therefore, pain and the body are two different things. Or see the happiness or suffering within the mind. At first, while sitting meditation, the mind is turbulent, not calm. Observe that the mind is unhappy and turbulent. Continued practicing, the mind becomes calm and develops happiness. Observe the happiness which arises. So, while sitting meditation, if happiness arises, see that the happiness is neither the body, bodily sensations, nor the mind. It will keep on separating on and on. Or, while practicing, whenever the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind make contact with the world, the mind will turn happy and unhappy. See that happiness and unhappiness are the things that are known. They are neither the body nor the mind. At times, wholesomeness and unwholesomeness arise. For example, when the mind is happy, greed usually arises together. We will see that happiness and greed are two different things. They are two separate things. Keep on separating on and on. Happiness belongs to the feeling aggregate. Greed belongs to the mental formation aggregate. The mind is the knower, which belongs to the consciousness aggregate. Keep on separating on and on, not through thinking, though. It is through seeing. To do that, the mind needs to be sufficiently rooted in awareness. Therefore, we cannot ignore samadhi. Some people won't be able to achieve absorptions. Therefore, feel the body. If the body moves or breathes, feel so on and on. After some time, the mind will gain strength and become rooted in awareness. You then start practicing separating the aggregates. To simplify, now you are sitting. Can you feel the body sitting? Try nodding your head. Can you see that the body makes movements as the mind is the knower? See, the mind and the body are two separate things. Furthermore, you try to separate happiness and suffering within the body. You'll see that they are different from the body. Separate happiness, unhappiness, and neither happiness nor unhappiness within the mind. You'll see that they are different from the mind. Keep it separating on and on. Also, wholesomeness and unwholesomeness are other things belonging to the mental formation aggregate, neither the body, feelings, happiness and unhappiness, nor the mind, which is another aggregate. Having separated the aggregates on and on, the mind of some people managed to sustain. However, that of others would be scattered. So, turn to calmness samadhi. If you can enter absorptions, do so. If not, feel the body moving, but do not observe the mind directly. The mind is quick. As soon as you try to observe it, it's gone astray. Unlike the body, it won't go away. Therefore, while conducting samadhi, if absorptions are not doable for you, observe the body instead of observing the mind. It is much easier because the mind is too quick. We come to see the body sitting or the body breathing on and on. After some time, the mind will gain strength and separate the aggregates. Once the aggregates have been separated, we observe that each of the aggregates, elements, and phenomena are under common characteristics or mutual attributes. All the phenomena, physical and mental, are under the mutual attributes, impermanence, suffering, and non-self. The impermanence is when something is there, and then it is not there. And it wasn't there, but then there it is. It is impermanent. Suffering is when something exists and is being suppressed to disappear. Non-self is whether something exists or not. It's not under our control, but depends on its contributory factors. These are impermanence, suffering, and non-self. Impermanence is when it used to exist but now falls away. Suffering is when something exists but is being suppressed to vanish. Non-self is whether something exists or falls away. It's not under our control, but depends on its contributory factors. When seeing each of the phenomena arising, we see that it is under the three characteristics. Now that there are plenty of phenomena, that is, body, feelings, mental formations, and mind, and each phenomenon has its numerous child categories, especially for mental formations. form comprises a large number of phenomena. Feeling comprises only one phenomenon, feeling. Perception, too, has one phenomenon. Mental formations is composed of 50 phenomena. Consciousness, or mind, comprises one phenomenon, which is the thing that knows objects. However, it is called differently. For example, when it knows an object through the eyes, it's called eye consciousness. In fact, it has one phenomenon, which is the phenomenon that knows objects. Moreover, there can be 28 phenomena in the category of form, though we don't have all of that. For example, there is a pair of forms, female and male. These two forms are not merely physical appearance. Back then, we could only differentiate through appearances. But now we can identify these forms through genetic testing, looking inside to see genes, chromosomes, and so on, to tell females and males apart. Physical appearance can be deceiving, for it can be altered through surgery. If you have a form of male, you won't have that of female. So, one form is excluded for each person. We don't need to understand all these details. A few forms would be sufficient: breathing out form, breathing in form, and standing, walking, sitting, lying down forms. In higher doctrine, it is said that these are not genuine forms, called communicative form, which are the moving forms we can feel. We don't learn these for the sake of learning the texts, but cleansing the wrong view that these are us. Therefore, once the mind is rooted in awareness, observe that the form is sitting and know that the sitting form is not us. That's how you do it. There is no need to separate numerous other forms. For feelings, there is no need to complicate. Apomorizing, perception, too, requires no complexity. It is merely one of the phenomena. There are a total of 50 phenomena in mental formations, though we don't have all of that. For example, if we are not capable of absorptions, dozens of phenomena won't appear to us, because it's only 4 people who can do absorptions. For the rest of us, observe when the mind is wholesome at times and unwholesome at others. Simple as that. Do not try to complicate or overthink it. The more you complicate it, the less it makes progress. Instead, observe what is truly there, what you are capable of, and what there is to see. In a phenomenon or a moment, there are a significant number of Dharma factors and phenomena arising together. However, observe what stands out. What stands out, observe it. Do not try to search for something to observe. There shouldn't be questions like, which one should I observe or see? Instead, which one plays a dominant role, know that one. Is it difficult to know which one stands out? Merely listening is difficult. To give you an idea, in a movie, there are many characters and actors all together in one scene. When we're watching the movie, we will pay attention to the character who is playing a dominant role. It can be a bad guy, not necessarily a male or female protagonist. It can be a comedic character who is playing the dominant role. Do you need to be told whom to look at? Not at all. We are all inherently capable of watching movies. We know precisely when to look at what characters. Like when you're in a room full of people, everybody sits still, and a person is doing this. We will be automatically drawn to look at that person. We will no longer look at 200 to 300 people sitting still, but at the person acting prominently. Therefore, observe the dominant one. Do not overthink it. And do not ask which one to observe. It is as if you don't have to ask which character in a movie you should focus on. You'll be able to wing it. While we are observing the dominant one, ignore the rest, because we will come to witness the one arising, staying, and falling away. It arises from its cause. Without the cause, it ceases to exist, and it's not under our control. In a movie, the cause is the script to speak or act like hitting, etc. We watch it. Likewise, there are plenty of phenomena within the mind like one of the mental formations, such as aversion. Many other subtle phenomena arise together upon its arising, such as attention and one-pointedness. These can cause you a headache. There is no need to search for how many phenomena are arising together at the moment. It's like a huge theatre full of many characters. They're working together, but the aversion is now playing its distinctive role, so observe the aversion. Therefore, do not get confused about which one to observe. Whichever is dominant, observe it, and it will play its role for us. Like when we're watching a movie, a character is talking. Once he's done, another character responds. We then pay attention to the guy who is responding. The job of the former character is done, and now it is that of the latter. Similar to all phenomena, once a phenomenon is no longer dominant, it is a turn of another phenomenon. It is the dominant one that we'll observe. But all the phenomena portray the same Dharma, impermanence, suffering, and non-self. The thing that we want to train our minds to know with crystal clarity is the phenomena, both physical and mental. They are called conditioned phenomena, the conditioned states in physical and mental phenomena. With causes, they arise. Without causes, they fall away. They are not under control. They are all under impermanence, suffering, and non-self. We come to practice Dharma to see these characteristics that are common to all things. But before we can do that, it's required for us to see the characteristic of each phenomenon. For example, greed has its unique characteristics, unlike aversion. Aversion, too, has its unique characteristics, unlike happiness, so on and so forth. Each phenomenon has its unique characteristics. In Bali, this is called distinctive characteristic. Each phenomenon has unique characteristics. Like the mind, it has a unique characteristic, which is its nature to know objects. Aversion's nature is to annihilate, pulverize, and expel objects afar. Greed is the state of attraction. If you like something, you draw in that thing. For example, when seeing a cute kitten, we'd like to hold the kitten, wouldn't we? This is greed when you are drawing it towards yourself like that. For aversion, it pushes away. Whatever you dislike, you push them away. Delusion is when the mind cannot firmly hold onto its grip on an object, and when it is confused, turbulent, indecisive, and scattered. Each one has its unique characteristic, allowing us to differentiate a phenomenon from the others. For example, greed is like this, aversion is like that, delusion is like this, happiness is like that, suffering is like this, form is like that, and mind is like this. You can tell them apart. However, we don't learn this for the sake of differentiation. Instead, we learn unique characteristics to see that a particular phenomenon is arising, staying, and falling away. Therefore, learning about their unique characteristics makes us understand a particular phenomenon. But why? It is so that we can see the common characteristics. We can see that the phenomenon may now exist yet will be subjected to the three common characteristics. It won't last forever. Seeing only phenomena is just commonest practice. It belongs to one of the Samatha practices. But when we can see the common characteristics, the three characteristics, it is that we can proceed to Vipassana practices. Therefore, we should start by practicing these things. I went into a lot of detail. To sum up, we should first train the mind to develop samadhi, either by entering absorptions, if you can, from second to eighth absorption. You will obtain the mind, that is a knower, or if you cannot, we will meditate on an object, and once the mind drifts away, know so. That would work too. Repeatedly do so, then the mind will gradually gain strength and become sustained. When it does, we come to practice separating aggregates. Having the aggregates separated, the mind will see each aggregate portraying various phenomena. For instance, the aggregate of mental formations comprised 50 different phenomena. But we don't need to learn all that. We learn what we have. Next, we will see that every phenomenon arises, stays, and falls away altogether. This is what we need to see. We don't want to see greed as impermanent, but the aversion is permanent. Instead, they are all the same, happiness or suffering. They are equal in terms of the three characteristics. Wholesomeness or unwholesomeness, too, are equal in terms of the three characteristics. Observe till you see the three characteristics. The word see should be underlined, not think. You need to see it. Vipassana is comprised of vi, meaning crystal clear, and passana, meaning seeing. Therefore, you need to see, not think or force. You need to see it. What is it that we need to see? For example, we see that greed arises, stays, and falls away. This is when we see, but if we think about whether the mind now has greed or aversion, this is not how we see, because we are lost in the world of thought. We keep collecting the right view by seeing the three characteristics as often as possible. Whatever happens, see its three characteristics. Whatever happens, see its three characteristics. At some point, the mind will conclude whatever arises, they all fall away. And everything that arises, they are all subject to the three characteristics. Keep it training. If anyone can do absorption, when it's high time, do calmness samadhi. If you're experienced, you incline your mind to the calmness in samadhi, and then it will be instantly calm. Once calm, you can rest in samadhi as long as you wish, but when the time comes, do not be lazy, withdraw the mind a little bit, so it can work. Do not let it be empty and still. It isn't easy to put into words. When it comes to mind training, you have to experience by yourself how you are going to observe the emptiness so that the mind becomes calm or so that it can work or fabricate. You need to see it for yourself. It's impossible to tell or teach. When I was new to Dharma practice, I did samadhi and observed my mind. I saw that the mind had greed, aversion, delusion, a happy mind, and an unhappy mind. It gradually converged and then became empty, sometimes empty and bright. When it's bright, and if we stay with the brightness or are stuck in the happiness, we're not going anywhere. However, suppose it becomes bright, and we become self-aware for just a little. In that case, the mind will be able to perform activities or work, and you will see a certain phenomenon emerges. Why do I use the phrase a certain phenomenon emerges? It's because we don't know what it is. We only see something resurface or waver. While practicing, there is an emptiness within. Suppose our mind is not stuck in calmness, emptiness, or happiness. In that case, it will continue cultivating wisdom through seeing the wavering in the middle of our chest. Some people see the wavering in the middle of their chest. Others see the rotating circling. Upon seeing the wavering, you'll see that it throws countless phenomena. Then perception will interpret whether it is greed or aversion. These two are the coarse mental formations. Unlike the subtle one, it's repeatedly wavering. This cannot be identified because it's beyond words to speak. While sitting meditation, you observe that it keeps on wavering. At the same time, the mind is another part as an observer without interfering with it. The wisdom will arise for the mind to understand step by step that the mind is neither us nor belong to us. Instead, it is nature which knows objects. It belongs to the world. Keep on knowing and observing. But if mental power or samadhi is insufficient, it will start to fool us. Previously, it was empty, and we know it. But if the mind starts to process, yet our mental power is not enough, the mind will move away outside a little bit and become empty. Empty again. Previously, it was empty from the inside. Now it's empty outside. There is another emptiness. The emptiness of Nibbana. There is no outside or inside. There are many levels of them. Keep at training till one day, you'll understand. But first of all, the five precepts need to be maintained. Four monks, apart from 227 precepts, you must not forget the five precepts, otherwise, you'll be doomed. Actually, there are some cases. They have loads of disciplines, but lack five precepts. The precepts that are truly necessary for monks are eight precepts. The rest are beneficial. They are helpful disciplines. 10 precepts are too beneficial. For example, those who don't possess any money in their mind will be different from those who have money in their pocket. Money is forbidden for monks because if you practice Dharma, you will see that having money develops pride. You have purchasing power and will buy anything you like. You won't see the negative consequences of the desire. Like wealthy people, they have everything they want, then won't be able to see the suffering as a result. Unlike monks, it is normal to get hungry in the evening. Their stomach growl, but they can only drink water. This way, the mind gets to see suffering. Or, whichever cravings arise, the mind will see suffering because they are not satisfied in any way. This is the tactic that masters taught us. I used to tell you when I met a monk who was the only child of a millionaire with a net wealth of around 200 million baht 40 years ago. I don't know how much it is equivalent to purchasing power today. He was an only child, but decided to ordain as a monk. One day, he saw another monk walking arms and received black beans in sweet coconut milk. It is his favorite, though he didn't get to have it. One day, he went to alms walking again and finally received it. In forest monasteries, all the food received would be piled up altogether. However, the black bean in sweet coconut milk he received earlier was already taken. He couldn't have it. As soon as he entered his dwelling, he cried and pitied himself why he needed to live in such difficulty. For lay people, you won't understand how detrimental sensual desire can be. What you can only see is that it brings pleasure. Whenever there is a sexual desire, you satisfy it and enjoy it. That you only enjoy sensual pleasures, but never realize their negative consequences, won't make you become dispassionate. You'll get attached to them. Therefore, monks have many disciplines to help improve themselves. Therefore, maintain the five precepts well for lay people. And, for monks, maintain your disciplines well, including the monastic disciplinary code, rules about monastic etiquette, rules beyond the monastic disciplinary code, and training rules. maintain them well. For some training rules, if they are ignored, you are offended. For others, they are voluntary. It's your decision whether to maintain them. Austere practices is an example. It's voluntary. It depends on your conditions. However, some training rules must be addressed, otherwise, you'll be offended. There are lots of minor details regarding monkhood. For lay people, the five precepts are a must. Maintain them well. At first, you may not yet see the use of it. After some time, you'll see the changes they bring about within yourself. For those who maintain the five precepts for some time, their mind will develop mental power and be readily inclined to samadhi. But as soon as they violate the precepts, the samadhi will be broken apart. If they come to maintain the precepts for some time again, the samadhi will regain its strength. That's because the precepts are the foundation of samadhi. For samadhi and wisdom, you need to train to gain. For precepts, they need to be intentionally maintained. Therefore, Dharma practice does not begin with breathing in, chanting put and out to. It begins with maintaining the precepts, training rules, and disciplines for monks. That's Dharma practice. Samadhi training is a must. Set aside time daily for formal meditation, whether sitting, walking, or any other meditation is fine. Whatever you are competent at doing is fine. Samadhi does not arise in any particular manner. It does not require you to walk, sit, to develop samadhi, or move in a specific manner to develop samadhi. Meditate on an object, then have the mindfulness to be aware of your mind. Samadhi will arise very quickly through mindfulness that knows the mind. That's why it is taught that mental training, which is to learn about the mind, will give rise to samadhi. To conduct sitting or walking meditation is merely a form. Its actual practice is to have the mindfulness to be aware of one's mind, which will readily give rise to samadhi. If you can enter absorption, do so every day. If not, during the day, whether you stand, walk, sit, lie down, eat, drink, do, talk, or think, or body moves, be mindful. Next, once the mind moves, be mindful. That you can sense the phenomena in the present moment will automatically give rise to the samadhi. The mindfulness will prompt the samadhi, the right samadhi. Samadhi is a contributory factor to wisdom. Both of them are. The calmness samadhi is essential, as well as the upright knowing samadhi. During wisdom cultivation, we will use the upright knowing samadhi. The mind is merely an observer or knower. But, after it witnesses phenomena for some time, it will tire. There we use the calmness samadhi as a resting place for some peace. The fruit won't be far away if you can do what I said. You might attain in this life or the next life. It might be over the next 2 to 3 lives or seventh life, one of the masters who possess sharp psychic skills used to tell me. I asked him, if practiced correctly, how long will it take to attain the stream enera? He answered firmly, not very long. No more than 7 lives. I pondered to myself that is a very long time, 7 lives. Though, we took birth and rebirth countless times. Therefore, once we listen to Dharma, we should preserve it by maintaining the precepts and training the mind to develop samadhi, both calmness and being upright. Once the mind is upright, train to cultivate wisdom. Start with separating aggregates. Once separated, try to see each phenomenon, portraying the 3 characteristics. That is Vipassana practice. Doing this will help break your round of rebirth cycle sooner and sooner. Ultimately, there is nothing. Nothing is there. We'll see that there is nothing to gain and nothing to lose. If there is something to gain, it is the right view. If there is something to lose, it is the wrong view. That's all. The right view arises. The right view or right understanding will help you see the truth. What's the truth? It is that this body is empty. The world is empty. The mind is empty. It is the same emptiness everywhere. The end of suffering is here, where there is no more fabrication. During the time I hadn't ordained yet, I used to misunderstand. I used to imagine entering Nibbana by establishing a kind of samadhi. My mind was rooted in awareness as a knower automatically. I set my mind out to the mental object. Once the mind was about to make contact with the object, it reversed to the knower mind. Once the mind almost made contact with the knower, I won't let it. It was then sent out to the object. Finally, the mind fell away. Suddenly, it vanished, but not like it ceased to exist. There was one phenomenon where there were no thoughts, no time, absolute nothing. No daytime, no nighttime. Absolutely nothing. Once the mind withdrew from that state, I felt like this might be the Nibbana. This must be it. It is empty and nothing. I kept doing this for some time and wondered if it was merely a calmless practice. This is no Nibbana. One day, I met Venerable Luangpu Boonjon. He possessed sharp psychic skills. He didn't know me well. Actually, he did know me well, but I did not know him. Let's put it this way. Some masters know us better than we know ourselves. He asked a monk to invite me. I did not want to. I didn't know him. This is the first time I have heard his name. But the monk insisted. So, I did. Once there, the master pointed at my face and asked how I practiced Dharma. I answered him that I neither hold on to the knower nor the object. I do not cling to anything. He yelled at me, what kind of Nibbana it is? How come there is a way in and out? He yelled like that. Then asked me, what now? How are you going to practice? I thought he couldn't understand my dialect well because neither did I. He was born northeastern but lived in the north. So, I repeated my answer that I practiced by neither holding on to the object nor the mind, neither the knower nor the known. He yelled at me the second time, what kind of Nibbana it is? How come there is a way in and out? My mind then let go of it, abandoned it, and never re-entered the state. He laughed. This is the loving kindness of the masters. I never knew him before, but he knew me well. In his eyes, I might make it into his list of poor practitioners. He was kind enough to teach me. Therefore, there is no way in or out of the true Nibbana. There are no such ways. Nibbana is Nibbana. There is no arising or falling away. Unlike the path and fruition, there are arising and falling away. They are supermundane that arise and fall away. But Nibbana is only supermundane that does not arise or fall away. It is the only phenomenon that never arises or ceases to exist. This phenomenon does exist, as well as the path leading to this phenomenon. Lord Buddha taught us morality, samadhi, and wisdom. In other words, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. That's the way. The path is still there. the trail of Dharma practice can be tracked. We can set the masters as our example. They are pure. We are thick with defilements, yet possess coarse wisdom. Still, there is a trace that can be seen and the path that can be followed. So, chop chop. Buddhism would not last long. Nowadays, the world is evolving so fast, some people are opinionated, like teachers or lecturers in universities. They graduated from abroad. They suggest not studying Buddhism because it's not essential. It cannot solve anything. And we have to separate religion from academics. However, they merely inherited this notion from Western countries. It's actually because the religions in their countries defy changes. Like Galileo, he made discoveries, but the church was against him. That's why Westerners want to separate religions from academics. But our Buddhism is not like that. Buddhism is a study of how not to suffer. No matter how much knowledge we possess, as long as we still suffer, we will never be able to answer our life's true purpose. Unlike Buddhism, it never obstructs the advancements of the world. People who don't understand this tend to pass on the misconception. There are plenty of people who pass on many misconceptions. Plenty of them, actually. This would lead to more misunderstandings for the following generations. By the time we age and die, younger generations will no longer want it. Therefore, do not wait until the day the religion Buddhism disappears. Practice Dharma as soon as you can. The know-it-all tends to cause a lot of problems. They give talks and teach children things like there was slavery in Thailand during the reign of King Rama V, and that it is oppression. They simply apply the slavery concept in Europe to what happened here. One of the most powerful countries took control of its neighboring countries and enslaved their people. This was what a group of Westerners did to another group of Westerners in early times. But they weren't that strong to be of use. They did their bare minimum. Instead, the Africans were held captive as slaves and forced to work. In contrast to the context of slavery in Thailand, by the time slavery had been abolished, the slaves were crying because they were on their own, and there would be no more care and protection. That was when we applied the concept from another country or another group of people to our own without genuinely understanding the context or situations of our country. And they keep on spreading the word. In my view, it will be more difficult in the future. So, hurry up. Practice Dharma as much as you can. Otherwise, you'll be naive enough to believe in whatever the Western world says. That should be enough for today's talk. It's about time 45 minutes. What I have spoken about just now is to urge you to practice Dharma. It's not to put the blame on any country or attack any group of people. It's a waste of time to do just that. It's not our matter of interest. What matters is to cleanse our defilements.
Number 1. I practice by feeling the body. Once the mind drifts away, I know so and observe the mind. Still, there is some controlling, interfering, and intention. I can separate the aggregates and see that they are not me. The mind starts to become the knower, the observer. It sees physical and mental parts as something that comes and goes. They are non-self. Please kindly guide my practice.
Practice more. But do not maintain the mind to be still. Still doing it. Can you feel that? You are maintaining the mind. Why maintain? Why preserve? It's because the mind is us. We strongly feel that it is us. That's why you maintain and preserve it. know that you maintain it. Let it be, but have the mindfulness to follow them. Your mind is a knower, an observer very well. The five aggregates are all separated except for the mind, which is still preserved. But initially, it's what you need to do, for the mind is swift and quick to wander away. Without enough samadhi and quick mindfulness, the mind will wander away for a long time. Therefore, it is not wrong to preserve it at first. But be mindful that you did it. And then, when the mind develops strength, release it. We will see that the knower mind arises and falls away, otherwise, it is permanent. Seeing others are impermanent except for the mind aggregate is not workable.
Number 2. I practice being with the body and mind. Once the contact was made, and the mind wavered, I saw a certain energy arising in the middle of my chest. With weak mindfulness, the mind will cling to it. I saw the mind suffer, wanted it to disappear, and got bored with the world. I used the method of lost and then know. I am intrinsically opinionated. When I am with my body, the thoughts lower their level. During sitting meditation, the mind is peaceful and still, so I could see the cells in my body arose and fell away. I saw the foul things. My mind was the knower, still, unwavering, and relaxed, and I saw that everything was the way it was. Please kindly suggest further practice.
Keep practicing what you did. Keep training, practicing, and collecting. You have a great improvement. Number 2 is good. Keep practicing and be aware of your defilements. It's good that you could see many defilements. Keep practicing.
Number 3. Luangpo assigned me to observe my body. During my formal practice, I felt that samadhi got stronger. I could see more of not neutral and the mind drifting away. Please kindly suggest if my practice was correct.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Good. Once correct, do more. Get less involved with others. Learn more about your heart or mind. Then, it will get even better.
Number 4. I practiced and saw that the five aggregates are suffering. I often see the mind in terms of non-self. I could feel that suffering was gone. Please kindly suggest further practice.
When we practice and see the phenomena, happiness arises. We come to see that happiness arises, stays, and falls away. For practitioners, the more we see suffering, the more happiness we have. And then do not get attached to the happiness. Instead, we see that everything comes and goes, even with the happiness from cultivating mindfulness and wisdom. We observe that it comes and goes. Keep feeling it. Keep cultivating. It's a lot better. Good. Good job.
Number 5. I chant and sit meditation for 30 to 40 minutes a day by chanting putto and observing the body breathing. I preserve the five precepts and try to be self-aware when I wake up, during the day, and before bed. I can become self-aware and see phenomena more often.
Still not neutral.
I could see that the body was merely a doll with the mind as a control center. Please kindly suggest the object of meditation that suits my temperament.
What you practice suits you well. See, the body moves as the mind is a knower, an observer. But do not force it to be still. If you practice purposely, the mind will get tight and dense. Know that you are now interfering with the mind, making it tight. Relax. Feel it as it is. Feel it in a relaxing way. During the time slot, go sitting meditation and so on. That is a must for everyone. Set aside time every day for sitting or walking meditation. Formal practice is necessary. It's very useful. And then be aware of your heart or mind. That is to reinforce your strength for Dharma practice. That is because your samadhi, number 5, is not enough. It easily gets distracted and lost for a long time. Therefore, conduct formal practice to gain more strength of samadhi. Can you see that your mind drifted into thinking just now?
Number 6. I chant and meditate before bed by chanting a mantra. Once the mind wanders away, I know so. Lately, I have had difficulties in life. I am calm, patient, and able to see suffering well. I see the compression within my chest while stressed before it relieves. And then I see illumination in samadhi. My volitions are successful, although they have never happened before. But this time, there is no doubt but stillness, waiting, and willfulness. Is what happening correct?
Correct. You must carry on practicing. It will get even more correct. Doing nothing is undoubtedly incorrect. Carry on. Keep practicing. See the changes within the body and mind. Can you feel that your body is not you? Can you feel that happiness and suffering are not you? They are merely known and observed. Can you feel that wholesomeness and unwholesomeness come and go? Can you feel that the mind can unreliably change? It is the knower and then the lost. It is good and then bad. It is happy and then unhappy. Know it as it was on and on. Like right now, can you feel that the mind develops a feeling? Can you see it? It is the rapture arising. Know so. Do not let it dominate the mind. Once the rapture arises, merely know so. Do not over-focus on it. Merely know it as it was. It is a phenomenon that arises, stays, and falls away like other phenomena. When suffering arises, the mind tends to get away from it. In fact, suffering cannot be escaped since it coexists with the world. No matter how hard you try, you'll never be able to run away from it, because the world is suffering. Keep observing. If your mind is not neutral, know that it isn't. If neutral, do not fear suffering because it belongs to the world. Suppose your mind is not neutral. In that case, when you experience suffering, you dislike it. You want to flee from it as soon as possible. Your mind becomes somber. Know the mind that dislikes suffering. Know the mind that tries not to suffer. Know it when it tries to be still. Know so on, and then you'll get better. The suffering will be less.
Number 7. I do formal practice by chanting and sitting meditation. During the day, I see breathing in and out, body moving, and mind, aversion, greed, and scattering. I know them as they were. I could see them fall away at times and not fall away at others. Did I see the body, mind, and arising and falling away correctly, or are they just in my head?
You can see them. You're not imagining things. Keep observing on and on. And when you keep seeing the phenomena, body and mind, arising and falling, at some point, your samadhi strength will be insufficient. The corruptions of insight will take place. It makes you even think that you have attained something or become absorbed in Dharma knowledge. Therefore, do not take formal practice for granted. Meditate, breathe, chant Budo, and so on during the time slot. Do it every day, so the mind gains strength. Seeing the mind straight away won't last long. The mind will get exhausted and develop the defilements of insight. Good. Keep breathing. just like that, but do not force the mind. Breathe in a relaxing way. See the body breathing as the mind is an observer. Good. Do just like that, and then the mind will gain more strength.
Number 8. I do chanting mantras, walking, and sitting meditation. While sitting, I could feel the energy collected on my forehead and in the middle of my chest. I could see myself falling asleep and not being able to control myself. Would you kindly suggest if I practiced samadhi correctly?
Keep practicing. When the mind is about to converge, it will be as if you're going to be asleep. No worries. Let it rest. But once the mind withdraws from that state, feel the body and or mind through mindfulness. If mindful of the mind is not doable, feel the body instead. When the mind withdraws from the samadhi, see the body and mind as separate entities. During Dharma practice, you can practice until the body disappears, and so does the world. Only the mind is left. That is when the mind access to the formless world. Once the mind withdraws from that state, the body will reappear. You will feel that the body and mind are separate entities. From that day forward, the body and mind will no longer be united. They are separated into different parts. The aggregates are separated automatically. Do not send out to overfocus. Do it in a more relaxing way. That is too tight. The mind won't be calm. When tight, the mind is unhappy and won't give rise to samadhi. Attend to your object of mediation. When the mind converges, let it be. Do not forbid it to happen. But as soon as it withdraws from that state, see that the mind works if you can. If not, see the body breathing and that the body is not you. Observe like that. Can you see that the minds just now and now are different? See the body breathing on and on. See the body breathing out. See the body breathing in. While moving, see the body moves. See the body standing, walking, sitting, and lying down. Feel it in a relaxing way. And then try to feel that the body, which is breathing, standing, walking, sitting, lying down, moving, and staying still, is not you and does not belong to you. Keep teaching the mind, so it won't merely stay still. Your mind is readily still. Therefore, contemplate the body, so the mind won't be attached to the stillness. Right now, the mind is correct. Just now, it's not. Right now, it's wrong. You start to draw in and force it to be still. Let it go. And see the body breathing. See the body moving. Do like this. Keep feeling on and on rather than sitting and forcing it still. It's a waste of time doing just that. The mind won't cultivate wisdom. It's to still. That should be enough for today. I gave talks for 3 days in a row. In fact, I give talks every day, never stopping during the day at times and the night at others. I never really get the chance to rest truly. Go home now.